Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 333 for January 10th, 2018. Remembering David Collingham, K3LP.
Hello, everybody. From Belleville, Illinois. Yeah, that's our other home, just across the river from the Arch, the Great Arch of St. Louis. This is K9EID, and we're here with a very special show tonight. I want all of you to pay attention. Some parts of this show are going to be crazy. Most of it's pretty serious. We've had a real disaster in the hobby this week, and Val's got them. She's really got a nice piece, and you'll see what's going on. So pay attention, okay? And let's see all who's here. Of course, ladies first. Valerie, how are you doing? You holding up during all of this?
I am. Jerry left yesterday for Bouvet, so kind of all by myself with my dog. But I did just get this. This is kind of cool. That's my first one like this. It's not your typical wooden one.
All right. Winner.
Central Division winner, so that's kind of cool. Another new plaque for the wall.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff coming up, so make sure you stay tuned. We've got really exciting de-expedition going on, and they're going to be here live with us from their de-expedition.
That's pretty neat. Yeah. All right. And what's happening with you, Gordo? Everything okay in Costa Mesa?
Everything is fine here, Bob. Unfortunately, to the north of us, those in the LA area and Santa Barbara, they really got hammered after the fire. 1,000 homes damaged or gone. 300 last night washed down with all the embankments and all the mud flowing because of the fire damage. So ham radio operators were there. They were staffing the evacuation centers. And I'm very happy to say ham radio played an important part. And because ham radio is so important, especially in emergencies, tonight we're going to talk about these guys, and that is meters. So if you ever wanted to know what your voltage is or how much current, we're going to be looking at each one of these meters. Bob, back to you.
Okay. And George, how you doing? Weather okay there, and you're making it all right? All the transmitters up and running?
Bob, all the transmitters are up and running here. Somehow I seem to have lost color burst on the background here. Not sure what's going on with that, but we're going to do a smoke and solder mailbag tonight. You know, I asked a question last week. I showed you a few of my favorite things that I did in 2017, and I asked what yours were. Well, we got a lot of great answers there. We're going to talk about a few of them tonight. And, it's good to be back again. You can tell it's warmed up a little.
Yeah.
T-shirt weather tonight.
Not quite T-shirt weather here, but... Well, I want to take just a couple of minutes here before we get over to Gordo. I got a wonderful email and a phone call this morning. Very proud of everything that's been going on here. But discovered that the Pine Board Project, and I'm sure... If you haven't been building it, you know about it, and you've read QST, well, QST awarded the Pine Board its cover award for January.
Hey, wow.
This is an award that readers vote on. And I know about that. I've received one back in 1982 for the EQ200 that we brought to the market. But I didn't say anything because I didn't. That wouldn't be fair. So this was one fair and square. And thanks to all of the readers and all of you here that voted for it. But I was really really proud of that. Let me tell you. But in all of this, why we. We've had some really great things happen. If you haven't read the article, why, please do. You can go online and get it. But I've gotten so many nice pictures. And I talked to Bill in 4DH just today. And he has done a really cool thing. He built his power supply and he built his preamplifier on chassis. And this is his test, the reason I'm showing you. I've showed you his, some of his work before. This is how he tests the preamp and the power supply with it. He put it into some, put the output of the preamp into some computer speakers. And it really, if you've done this, you know what I'm saying. It's beautiful. It's pretty scary how good that preamp is, but it's a good way to test it. There's Bill's whole rig, the power supply, the preamp, and then he built the final on pine board. So just fun ways to do it. We also have had a lot of questions about some parts. We know about AES, Antique Electronics, and some of them they don't have. And the relays that we talked about and showed you how to build a pine board relay, Gateway has them. Gateway Electronics is in St. Louis. Gateway Dash. You have to make sure you put the dash. They have a great website, and best to call them. It's always best to call places. I don't know why people have got to plug it on my internet. Yeah, right, to see what's there, but it's best to call them. They've got the relays, they've got the bridge rectifiers, and they got tons of capacitors and resistors. You bring up their site, and you'll see what I mean. They have got all kinds of stuff. I was there yesterday. I'm getting some things together, and I'm going to send to a few guys, but that's a good place to find things like that. They really have it done for you and done well. And you want to remember to go to HeilSound.com, and there you're going to be able to see the really great parts of what's been going on with the whole project. All of the videos are there. Everything that we've been doing are there. All of these videos and things like that we've been putting on the show, it's all there. So with that, why you want to you want to pay attention, because it's really happening, and we're so thrilled. So let's kick it over and see what's going on down in Costa Mesa. So how are you doing, Gordo? And you're not in the fire thing and not in the mud things. I know that, but
no,
that's good.
We had just a little bit of rain, so we are good, Bob. And just our hearts go out to all of those folks that survived the fire only to be washed away with all the mudslides. But ham radio is there, and ham radio is making it happen. And those ham operators are operating on battery power and so on. And I thought we'd just briefly talk about monitoring your voltage. Well, all of us are familiar with the analog voltmeter. And before you say, well, it's too big, it's too clunky, or you've got possibly an analog amp meter, there's a way of going digital. But before you chuck these out, there's something that these do, the analog meters, that the digital meters may not do well, and that is they'll tell you how good your battery is. Now, a battery, the typical floating voltage at 13.8 or 14.2 for the lithium iron phosphate batteries when they're fully charged, that tells you that, yeah, okay, they're charged up, but whether or not those plates and the battery chemistry can withstand current, you want to monitor how much the voltage will dip. And in our communications van, we have a big voltmeter. And during engine starting, it'll start at probably 13.8. But during the actual cranking of the engine, it drops down to about 11.5. And if it sticks at 11.5 as the 454 is turning and turning and turning and then gets started, that's good. But if it takes a dip to 11.5 and 11 and 10.5 and 10, that tells me I probably have a battery or two going south. You can't necessarily tell that on the digital meters because many times during engine cranking, the digitals will just not be able to follow those dips in the voltage. But let me tell you, digitals have their place. First of all, digital voltmeters a few years ago started out very small, and the display was great. They came in different colors. And these are anywhere from $15 to $20, not real expensive. They draw like one milliamp or even less than that. And they faithfully will follow voltage fluctuations and voltage changes, as you can see right here. Then they went a little bit larger. And DX Engineering has... sets of these different types of voltmeters for different applications. These are the very common ones you see at Hamfest, and they come in about three or four different colors, and they too faithfully will read up or read down depending as to what the voltage is. So these are good. They run cool. They also, with DX Engineering, have LCDs because during the daylight hours, these are a little tough to be trying to read. In fact, during Quartz Fest, that's coming up shortly, we're going to be doing all sorts of evaluations. And next week, I'm going to point out what can go wrong at a big ham radio gathering. And I'm going to take 21 years of Quartz Fest activities and pull out to what I feel are just some of the things that, gosh, I never thought that that would malfunction like that, other than rain. Well, back to the voltage meters. Here's one that I just got, and I love it. And it is a digital meter, and look at this. As we vary the voltage, you'll see the outside colors change. And if you're not right next to the voltmeter and you need to read it at a distance, you can begin to see how it'll track your voltage and go into different colors if the voltage is either too high or come down here or very low. So I like that little outside ring. It's about a $25 to $29 meter, and I don't have a model number. I know some of the ham stores are carrying them, but this is my favorite in that it really works well. But because it's a voltmeter, you've got to put up with the brightness of the display, which is pretty bright, which means that if you're going to put it in the dark cabin of your sleeping quarters of the RV, it's going to probably keep you and your wife up all night long. DX Engineering and others carry this wonderful voltmeter. This not only calculates both volts as well as current consumption, but left-end circuit turned on, it'll calculate watts and watt hours, either gain if you have a solar panel or watt hours lost if you don't have a solar panel. It's a thin film transistor display, which is easily seen in both the daylight as well as in the dark. So I like this one a lot because it lets me come back and see whether or not my solar panel is working. And you'll see that on the DX Engineering catalog on their page 112, and they've got a host of other cool voltmeters. HamSource, which DX Engineering sells, also have a voltage distribution panel, and it has a small little voltmeter, and this is pretty nice. And the nice thing about it is it comes with the Anderson connectors all lined up, ready to roll. This particular one, you do need to assemble it ahead of time, the Andersons. But on some of the other, the Andersons are already there. So I encourage all of you to consider voltmeters because when you have an emergency operation going on, if you're the CO, you want to be able to look over there and just make sure that their batteries are charged up and that the voltage is where it should be, especially for those running a single sideband. We'll be running the big ICOM weekend after next out at Quartzsite. Ray is going to be there. Wow, this is great. Ray Novak from ICOM America. And he's got a host of different rigs. And I better make sure that we've got enough voltage for all his gear. And you can be assured that I'm going to have one of these little guys that will constantly be monitoring to make sure that our voltage is up to where it is. But again, I don't trust any voltage readout for face value. I want to see what this readout does when they're transmitted. That's when you're pulling current, and that's where you'll see a sag in the voltage, and you want to just sort of make a note how far down you're pulling that voltage. So that's my story, Bob. I've got to do some wiring up. I've got one of those brand new ones right here, and I need to wire it to some Andersons. So, Bob, we will be with you next week having a funny on all of the things that can go wrong at a ham demonstration. And we'll recount 21 years of QuartzFest. And by learning on those 21 errors, hopefully this coming QuartzFest will be a huge success. About 700 hams to 1,000 will be descending in the RV area about 5 miles south of Quartzsite, Arizona. And we've got 110 different seminars, usually three going on concurrently. Thanks to Tracy, who has been doing all of the great work on getting those seminars scheduled. Even Don Arnold, W6GPS, coming all the way out from his pad in Chattanooga, is going to be there to talk all about the latest of radios. So that's what's happening here. And again, keep your voltage up. And you can get these through DX Engineering. We're now back to Bob. Take it away, Bob.
Well, Bob
George.
Changed his shirt here.
I got it, George. Take it away, George.
Gordo, that was an interesting segment there. And, you know, I was looking, and I don't have the picture. I didn't bring it up where we could look at it on screen here. But the old meter that looks like a Simpson 260 with a digital readout in it. I think it's a 360 or maybe a 460. I'm not sure, but that's an interesting looking old meter there as well. Well, we'll be back in just a moment, but first, let's have a message from ICOM.
Happy New Year's from ICOM. Start the new year out with a bang with one of ICOM's new available products. Communications have never been so fun. The SDR you've asked for is here. ICOM's new 7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signal, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF Direct Sampling System, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. ID31A Plus, a new D-Star communications device, is here. Easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide digital communications. Share pictures and text messages. IPX7 waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
You can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing as well for a new radio. And for January, that new radio is the compact and submersible ICOM ID31A+, a 5-watt UHF digital transceiver with built-in GPS, micro SD card slot, analog and D-Star operation, and automatic repeater list up for D-Star. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. Val, I understand you've got some really good interviews for us tonight.
I do. I have Ken, Lima Alpha 7, Golf India Alpha, and Adrian, Kilo Oscar 8, Sierra Charlie Alpha. They're live with us from Somalia. That's right, Somalia. They're operating there as 6 Oscar, 6 Oscar. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Good morning. good evening over
Adrian's
there.
Adrian's on the left and Ken is on the right. I got that right, correct?
Yeah. Depends on how you look at the picture.
Well, I appreciate you guys taking time out of your busiest schedule because you guys have been going crazy on the bands operating from Somalia. And I know right now there's probably a really nice opening here to North America. So we're going to keep it quick. Now, Adrian, you're from New York, and Ken, you're from Norway. So how do you guys know each other? Have you guys done this together before?
No, actually, we've been corresponding by email, but last year in spring, we met at the Visalia DX convention, and we talked, and we said, you know, we both go to the expeditions alone. Why not do something, you know, together? So, you know, Ken put up the logistics of getting here to Somalia, and here we are, almost a year later.
And now, when did you guys get there, and how long are you guys going to be in Somalia? Because I know I need you guys on a bunch of bands yet.
Well, first of all, congratulations for working us, because the path to U.S. is really, really, really tough. We're doing our best, but the propagation doesn't help. And we've been here for a week, and we're going to be here for another week.
So there's still hope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and,
definitely.
And what bands and what modes are you guys operating on from there?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's mostly CW. You also do some sideband. And Adrian also yesterday did some FT8. So that was a historical QSO. It was the first FT8 QSO from Somalia. So basically it's CW with SSPM as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's all I've gotten you on right now is CW. But I do need you on RIDI and or I can do FT8. So I'll get you on either FT8 or sideband as well. So, and what kind of equipment are you using? And I believe Victor has some shots of some of your antennas and equipment as well.
Yeah, we are using K3 transceivers. And we have a KPA500 amplifier and the Juma 1000 amplifier. We're using a big IR vertical antenna and Mosley here's in the pictures and a Mosley beam, and we have a bunch of dipoles and some other contacted verticals. Here's the beam that Ken is using, multi-band including work bands. This is me installing the vertical for 80 meters. It's with raised radials. Quite a challenge to install, not from the technical point of view, but trying to keep a great balance between being and staying safe and going out and installing beverages and some other, you know, antennas.
And there's your little shack there. It probably gets loud with you both on sideband.
Well, because the propagation, the way it is, you know, we try to push a lot of CW so that we keep a good rate. We're up to 10,000 QSOs, like I said. So, and that's mostly because we do a lot of CW. We can keep a higher rate on CW than other modes. Although we do try to do SSB and RIDI and, like Ken said, FT8.
And I know there's another shot, that shot right there. And I saw the barbed wire. So what is the security like there for you? Do you guys feel safe there?
Well, it's a safe environment. It's a guarded place. So we have soldiers keeping an eye on the gates and, you know, at the facilities here. And this is a picture that we actually took, I think, yesterday. Yesterday, we were just coming back from outside the facility where we have installed some beverages, and we had some problems with it, and we fixed it. We were so happy that we were able to fix it. It's quite a challenge to get things done here. And when we came back, we said, okay, let's take a shot with the good guys that keep us safe. And these are two, the guys that, you know, were at the front gate, or back gate,
so
I should say.
You're in some kind of compound, is that right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And I did notice that you were almost at the 10,000. You probably broke it when I looked on Club Log, because you guys are on Club Log. And for those of you who aren't even a member of Club Log, if you work the six Oscar, you can go to Club Log and go into the log, check, put in six Oscar, put your call in, and see if you've worked, you know, what bands that they have you on, in case you're not quite sure if they came back to you. Now, how often are you updating your Club Log?
Well, the good thing about this is that to avoid the duplicate QSOs and give more chances to others for all-time new ones, we decided to have a live update. So the moment you make the QSO, a few seconds later, go on Club Log, check it, and say, oh, look at this, I have it. And, you know, you can consider yourself a winner. And not only that, every 24 hours, we upload all the QSOs to Logbook of the World. So the next day, you can look at the logbook of the world and see your QSO confirmed, and voila, you've got a new one confirmed.
And since you're in Club Log, when you're done next week, are you going to activate OQRS?
We have a QSL manager, Charles M. Zero Oscar, actually Oscar from UK, and he has. He has a separate OQRS system, so anybody who wants a direct QSL card can go into the OQRS system, Charles.
Well, and I think if you go to la7gia.com, right, if you go there, there's a six Oscar, and you can go in there and check your logs there as well. And that's really where you can also donate, because you guys are there for a cause, correct?
yeah, so
well,
kind of.
You're helping Doctors Without Borders, right?
Yes, that's correct. We are paying for all the expenses of this, the expedition, everything that has to do, any money that are donated or from QSL cards, they'll go into the organization called Doctors Without Borders. And we all the donations will be sent there at the end of February. Ken actually can give you a more updated amount of how much we...
Yeah, so far we have actually about, I think, $7,000-$8,000 collected. So the plan is to donate the money to Doctors Without Borders February 1st. And this money will be earmarked the work in Somalia. That is very important to us, that all the money we give will go back to Puntland in Somalia.
Well, that's wonderful that you're doing that. They're a wonderful organization. And so if anybody's interested in learning more, you do have a Facebook group. I know it's just search six Oscar in Facebook, and you can join that group. And then also, if you put six Oscar in Google, you'll find the website as well, and you can learn more how to donate or PayPal and help these guys with Doctors Without Borders, which is really wonderful. And, you know... You guys, it's just the two of you, right? And you're on the air all the time. Are you guys getting any sleep?
Yeah, we were sleeping 1 hour, only 90 minutes before this TV show. So,
because it's 5:30 in the morning there right now, correct?
Yes, it is. But sleep is not important, but pile-ups are. So.
Yes, they are. Especially to the guys on the other end of them, you know, and we're keeping you away from them. And so I'll let you go real quick here. But first, I want to know, I know you've been there a week now. Any really good stories to tell, or any good de-expeditions coming up on the horizon?
Well, there's always something coming up. But, you know, we work on different projects in the same time. And you never know which one comes to fruition. Basically, we tend not to give details until you have everything confirmed. And just like with Somalia, we've been working on this for so long, and we only got the final approvals maybe 2 weeks before our departure. So we had to announce this very late, but it's better this way, because this way you don't want to announced the expedition, and then because of small detail, you can't actually go there. So,
and jinx
but watch
it.
The,
it always jinxes it, too.
You
and you know what? I
got
to say this. You know, when these guys go to these islands, and they do it on their own dime most of the time, and it's a lot of work, and I'm sure it's hot there, and you're working all these hours.
Very hot.
And there's a big pile up on the other end, and they're trying to get you. And it is tough to get into Somalia from North America, and so I'm sure there's a lot of frustration from a lot of North Americans, and so it's really easy to be critical of the operators from these activated locations. And I tell you, I'm looking on the cluster for you guys because I need you on a couple other bands, and lot of wonderful comments. I mean, it's like every other comment is good op, good op, good op. So those are hard to get. So congratulations on doing a really good de-expedition from Somalia.
Well, the important thing is that we are here to make contacts, nothing else. There's no sightseeing involved, no other activities. Just pileups. So, you know, even though sometimes it may appear like we're not present or doing something else, it's because maybe it's windy and we have to check a big antenna, or, you know, something happened with the power, with electricity, or something, you know, or the internet. So sometimes we disappear for 5 minutes, but we're here to make contacts, nothing else.
And you're hearing okay on the low bands? No noise issues over there?
Well, that's our biggest challenge. Unfortunately, although this location is pretty safe, it has a lot of equipment that generates a lot of noise. So when there's no noise, the noise is around the S6, S7. When there's noise, you can't work. It's basically we have to stop operation for about 5 hours, sometime late in the afternoon, around almost 6 o'clock in the afternoon local time. That's about 3 Zulu. And then for 5 hours, we can't work anything. But we use that opportunity to sleep. And unfortunately, that's when good openings to US are. But, you know, there's nothing we can do if the noise is 20 dB below, you know, above the signal. So it is what it is.
Yeah, 160 is hard enough as it is. Without the noise. Yeah. And I know when you go to some of these more underdeveloped countries, their electrical grids just, you know, I know there's lots of noise. So hats off to you guys for a wonderful de-expedition from Somalia. Stay safe. Keep it going. And I'll let you guys get back to the pileup. And we do appreciate you coming on Ham Nation tonight.
Thank you, Bob, for having us on the show. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. 7388. And look for me on 80 and 160. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, guys. Well, it is a de-expedition season, and there's a really big one coming up, as you heard at the top of the show. Jerry and a bunch of the North America guys left yesterday morning for Chile, and they landed about 3 hours ago in Punta Arenas. As a matter of fact, I just got a text from Jerry. A couple of them that aren't sleeping are because it's 12:45 there, are actually watching the show right now. So that's kind of cool. They will be heading by boat to Bouvet. And I have a slide for that if you want to show that, Victor. And it is Bouvet Island, 3Y0 Zulu, is the most remote island in the world. And you can kind of see it there. It's wedged between the southern part of South Africa, the southern part of South America, and Antarctica. And from Punta Arenas to get to Bouvet, it's going to be about 14 days. And so if you want to track their progress, if you just go to that website right there, the share.garmin.com/Bouvet, it will be pinging, I don't know, every so many hours, and you can watch the progress on the boat as it's heading towards Bouvet. Now, that's not going to happen for a couple of days now because they have to take boater safety and their meetings and things like that. But so make sure you could do that. Or if you want to just make it easier, you can subscribe to the 3Y0 Zulu Bouvet Island Facebook group. So just go search that on your Facebook search bar and put your call sign in, and then I'll approve you and get you in the group, and you can keep up to date on what's happening with that de-expedition. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff coming up as they activate. So look for that in a couple of weeks or so. And last not least, I want to mention, for those who haven't heard, you know, we weren't able to get the website up for the Ham Nation 300 certificates. And so I'm doing those by hand. So if you want to get your Ham Nation 300 certificate, send me an email, nv9l@arrl.net, and I will try and get those out to you as fast as I can. And also, I'm still doing tips, tricks, and hacks for ham radio. So if you have any cool tips, tricks, or hacks, that's hard to say, about antennas, a shack, or something, you know, other people might be interested in, a cool little trick, make sure you email me that as well, and I will get that on the air, your photos and ideas at nv9l. nv9l@arrl.net. Now, that's all for this part of my segment. I am going to be on after the chat room, and we're going to pay a special tribute to a very special ham. And so that's all I've got for now. So I'm going to pass it over to Don. Welcome, Don.
Hey, Val. Thanks a lot. And I want to say hello to all of our listeners on WTWW, the big shortwave, 5085 and 12.105. And if there's something ham radio related that you want to get on the air at WTWW, you can do that. Just email them at WTWW. It's email@WTWW.us. Very, very simple. Yeah, you mentioned Bouvet. That's going to be exciting. And we're going to be talking about DX engineering right now. And all the DXers on the planet are just beside themselves because after years, decades, in fact, of preparation, the long-awaited 3 Yankee 0 Zulu Bouvet Island de-expedition, number 2 on Ham Radio's Most Wanted list, is almost here. DX Engineering proud to play a major role in helping make this a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and a huge success for thousands of hams who hope to log this rarer-than-rare DXCC entity. I mean, this is the farthest place that you can get from anywhere on the planet, pretty much. And here's a reminder of some of the key details. Now, depending on the weather, this 20-member team, who is extremely experienced, is scheduled to arrive on Bouvet January 20th. Oddly enough, my son Tyler, in 7TMW's birthday, they plan to operate from this uninhabited, glacier-covered rock 1,090 miles from Antarctica until the end of February. The team's website will give you propagation prediction videos on all bands, as well as a handy tool that lets you obtain propagation data specific to your QTH. And, of course, the folks at DX Engineering have gone above and beyond to help their fellow hams work them all. They've collaborated with the 3 Yankee 0 Zulu team to engineer and produce the following mission-critical gear exclusively designed for Bouvet: an efficient 90-foot, top-loaded, 160-meter vertical that can be quickly and safely installed. Features a heavy-duty hinged pivot base with custom base insulators that accommodate a 40-foot falling derrick made with 3-inch diameter pipe, a prototype beefed-up falling derrick mask system capable of handling Bouvet's harsh weather. The support structure can be set up wearing thick gloves, has a base that can handle the wind load of a full-size 3-element 20-meter Yagi, and it breaks down for easy transport via helicopter. This is specialized stuff. And as the DX Expeditions official supplier of coax cable, DX Engineering provided 400 max low-loss 50-ohm coax assemblies with the patented revolutionary PL259 connectors, also available to upgrade your own station in time for Bouvet. Other DX Engineering gear ready for deployment on Bouvet include the NCC2 receive antenna phasing system, the TFS4 Series B transmit 4-square system and phasing cables, the RF Pro 1B active magnetic loop antenna, and a whole lot more. If you want to get your station ready for the 3 Yankee 0 Zulu Bouvet Island de-expedition, well, you have time. Still a couple of weeks left. DX Engineering offers everything you need to break through the pileups and log this elusive, exclusive contact, including amplifiers, transceivers, headsets, and every accessory you can think of. DX Engineering, you know, ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern time are shipped the same day. With proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7, 365 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And we thank DX Engineering for their support of Ham Nation. Just the best folks over there. George, what have you got going on with Smoke and Solder and contests and stuff? You got something up your sleeve. I know you do, even though they're short sleeves.
Well, yeah, they are short sleeves, Don. And I do have something. You know, last week I asked a question. Well, first off, I showed some projects I had done in 2017 and some different items that I had played with and the ones that I enjoyed most over the year. And I asked the question, you know, what was your favorite? Well, I don't remember exactly what I asked. What was your favorite ham or tech project item last year? And I got a lot of answers here. And we're going to cover a few of them tonight. Not all, because it was just too many, and people were doing some interesting stuff. First, though, Bill Boyer told me that he built an 817 interface a few years ago, and he put a large LCD on it and incorporated reading the radio and band voltages and a few other things. I believe by a heads-up display last week, kind of reminded him of that. He sent me a link to a video on it, and I watched that a little early. It was really neat. Gene Moore, N8YRF, said, number one, the Radio Shack speaker rebuilding was interesting. He's looking for a supplier of the foam pads that go on lightweight Radio Shack headphones. You know, you used to get some of those at Radio Shack. I don't know if they had them in more recent years or not. So I'm not sure where you're going to find those. If someone knows, let me know. You may can find them on the internet just by doing a little searching. Gene said, number two, the Raspberry Pi 3B was interesting. He keeps wanting to work with the Raspberry Pi, but he hadn't made the plunge yet. And he's wondering, could you set up one for a dedicated packet computer? And yeah, Gene, it would be perfect for a dedicated packet computer, no doubt about that. And number three, the display addition to the HF mobile radio, the heads-up display I did there. He said he has an ICOM 756 that developed lines in the display. And I have not heard of that being a problem on that rig, but it could be. Well, that would be a solution. Of course, if you haven't got in to the Arduino and some of that stuff, it might be a little challenge because my code won't work on anything but that 857. You can make it work with other rigs. You'd have to do a little programming. And I have heard from some folks who plan to do that. Take what I had done, modify it to work with a different radio. Mike Jones, KM4TQU. Said George, his favorite project this past year was the BitX 40. And he says he actually has it working. And he added fuse holders and some other goodies. And he made the mic from a CPVC valve or pipe. Interesting, Mike. I've heard a lot of good things about the BitX 40s. Mike Rosar, N4CNZ, said his favorite project last year was presenting live demo type programs to his ham club, the Lincoln County Amateur Radio Association in Tennessee. A couple of the most notable live presentations were using an Arduino and a cat port on his rig to automate antenna switching. That's a good use for it right there. Measuring common mode currents and then eliminating it during the presentation with ferrites. Now, you know, that would be a good presentation to do at a ham club, is to show actually, you know, RF on a cable and then seeing it dissipated by using ferrites. Paul Brown, WD9GCO. And Paul, well, he works with Don here on an amateur radio newsline. We won't hold that against him, though. He said he dropped some...
Oh, yeah, you should. You really should hold it against him. Yeah, okay. You really should. Yeah, he's responsible for me having a unicorn pajamas. So, yeah, you should hold everything against him.
Oh, I didn't know he was behind that. Good going there, Paul. He was doing some dumpster diving, Don. He said he was dumping some old computers and electronic waste dumpsters, and he noticed an interesting-looking piece of test equipment in there, and he dug it out, and it was a 3.5-amp, 0 to 30-volt precision bench power supply, and the positive bonding post had been cracked off on it. He pulled it out, tested it, and the thing actually worked. So at Dayton this past year, when he wasn't coming up with the idea for your unicorn pajamas there, he did a little searching around, found him another bonding post, took it home, used a soldering iron and a Dremel tool, repaired that power supply. And so now he's got a $200 power supply. He's got about 75 cents and a little elbow grease invested. That's good. Mike K0ZS said three cool things that he did in 2017. He added a real-time clock to a Raspberry Pi. Then he connected a TNC and a 2-meter rig with a Ringo Ranger of about 25 feet, runs it on battery back DC, and that's enabled him to provide a APRS, digital repeater, and iGate, filling unserved portions of three counties there. The second thing he did, dusted off his old TS520SE, and using KV60's circuit board, he built an Arduino-based digital readout, hooked that up, got it going. He's using a LCD display, but plans to upgrade it to Nixie tubes. I thought LCDs were newer than Nixie tubes, although Nixie tubes are certainly cool. You know, I have them in my frequency counter. And he's experimenting with external DDS VFO based on an $8 Adafruit programmable breakout board and an Arduino. And three, he said he's using an Android tablet RTL SDR dongle and SDR Touch app. And with some adapters and an oscilloscope probe, he found out how he could create a way to look around for IF tap points in his rig, and did that on all his rigs. He found where the passband was. He could watch it on a waterfall. And he replaced the tablet with a PC connected to the cat port, connects back to his rig, and then the RTL dongle SDR display stays in sync with his rig as he tunes around. That's neat. I have done that before, but it was with a soft rock. And that was really a lot of fun putting that together. Brian W8LN said his favorite project 2017, WSPR with the Soda Beams WSPR light. So he learned a lot about antennas and propagation using a simple device. Ended up buying a second one to expand his activities with WSPR. And, yeah, you know, that's a great mode, and I've seen a lot of people doing that to test out antennas. It runs low power, but, you know, it can sit there and people can receive it. And it reports back to a system there. You can find out where you've got propagation to and where you don't. And it's a good way to kind of evaluate different antenna projects. And then one more here we're going to read, because I had to pick a winner. And the random winner, Francis Higgins, W8RZN, and he said his favorite project was the BitX 40 QRP 40-meter transceiver. He built it and made several mods, and it's become his best QRP rig yet. Starting now, the Micro BitX 6-band QRP rig. So he's going to work on the Micro BitX 6-band there, and maybe we'll hear back on how that turned out for him. I know a lot of people are doing those BitXs, and that's what it's all about. I did hear from some people in there who were building the Pine Board projects as well. And, of course, we know all about the success of that. And I'm not building one myself here, but, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm wanting to. Well, congratulations, Francis. You're going to win a DX Engineering silkscreen t-shirt, just like the one I have right here, courtesy of DX Engineering. We appreciate them sponsoring Ham Nation. And next week, I will not be here, so we're not going to start up another contest now, but we will the following week when I'm back. Thanks, everyone, for sending me your emails and telling me how much fun you had in 2017, what you had been working on. Now, everybody, keep it up. Maybe some of those topics we covered here tonight will give you a little inspiration, and you can get started hacking or experimenting or making contacts, what have you. You know, some fun activities in ham radio and technology in 2018 here. And we may do this again in the future, revisit it and see what everybody's working on. Well, that does it for me. And it's that point in the show. Yes, it's Don Wilbanks on the news.
Yeah, and before we get into the Newsline thing, the Whisper, the WSPR, is really fascinating. If you're not playing with that, you really need to. I had a lot of fun with that during the solar eclipse. I actually had my Whisper set up to band hop, and it would go from 80 to 40 to 20 to 10 and hop back and forth, and was able to watch that remotely when I was at work as the eclipse was coming over. It was just absolutely fascinating. So, yeah, if you're not playing with Whisper, weak signal reporting, you really need to play with that a little bit. All right, let's go ahead and get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2097, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. The dawn of a new year has brought the ARRL International Grid Chase, which is challenging hams to operate on any band except 60 meters in pursuit of as many different Maidenhead grid squares as they can possibly work.
Newsline managed to catch up with a veteran of this kind of grid square victory, Pat Rose, W5OZI of Junction, Texas. In 2010, Pat became the second recipient of the ARRL's Fred Fish Memorial Award. The award is given to hams who successfully work all 488 grid squares in the contiguous United States. Pat became the first ham to replicate on 6 meters what Fred Fish himself had accomplished before becoming a silent key. Pat told Newsline that he once believed working all 488 grids was impossible. He said because it was a new award at the time, he thought it would be fun to try. He even ended up working some rare grids. He told us in his email, "I finally worked KB8U, Russ, in CM79 on June 17, 2010 for the last one when he went backpacking there. Remember Pat's success and know that persistence surely pays off." For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW.
April will be here before you know it, and so will the International DX Convention.
If you're wanting an early seat at the table for the International DX Convention, you can secure yourself a spot in just a few days. Registration opens on the 15th of January for the 69th annual event. The convention is sponsored by the Southern California DX Club and is being held April 20th to 22nd at the Visalia Convention Center. The keynote speech at Saturday's banquet will focus on the Bouvet Island DX Expedition, 3 Yankee 0 Zulu. The team of hams is scheduled to leave later this month for the Rare Island, which is second on the DXCC's Most Wanted list. Other activities at the California Weekend Convention will feature talks by some of the world's most accomplished DXpeditioners, sharing their tips and stories. To get more details, visit their website, dxconvention.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
A sad addendum to this story is the tragic passing of David Collingham, K3LP, noted contester and DXpeditioner. David was part of dozens of the world's biggest DXpeditions and a 2014 inductee to the CQDX Hall of Fame. On the night of Friday, January 5th, David let his dog out. When the dog didn't return, David went searching. The dog had fallen through a frozen pond and David attempted a rescue. Our deepest condolences go out to his wife, Rebecca, son, Ryan, and daughter, Mandy. David Collingham was 59. You'll be hearing more Cuban hams on the air soon. The latest licensing exam in Cuba produced plenty of new amateurs and quite a few impressive upgrades.
Radio amateurs in Cuba have proven themselves to be scholars. The FRC, the Cuban Radio Federation, reports that 98% of the candidates taking the licensing test on December 16th have passed. That means Cuba will have 103 newly licensed hams getting call signs with a CL prefix and 100 others qualified for upgrades to higher levels of licensing with the call sign prefixes of CM and CO. The FRC reports that this rate of success surpasses performance on the previous exam by 8%. The FRC announced that it was pleased with these latest test results and hopes the addition of the new licensed amateurs will increase radio access to regions of Cuba that are mountainous and otherwise inaccessible. The FRC is also reaching out increasingly to youngsters and YLs. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
Space weather really quiets down with a spotless sun and only a wispy coronal hole to make some noise. Will emergency communications suffer? Those stories are more in the news this week. Happy New Year, everybody. And as promised, the sun has basically gone to sleep in the new year. We do have a few bright regions on the Earth-facing disk that's keeping solar flux up barely at marginal levels for amateur radio propagation, but this likely won't last. We also have a remnant of a coronal hole that's going to be moving into the Earth strike zone here in the next 3 to 4 days. It will give us a little bit of a disturbance, maybe even bring aurora down to high latitudes, but at mid-latitudes, it may be a struggle. Let's hope that it's enough of a disturbance to help boost radio propagation for you emergency responders this week, because these bright regions, they ain't cutting it. Switching to your M-Flare threat meter, you can see we are extremely low when it comes to the X-ray flux. As a matter of fact, these are some of the lowest levels we've seen in this solar cycle, which is expected. Again, we are approaching solar minimum. So this is good news for you GPS operators and satellite phone operators. This is bad news, though, for you amateur radio operators. I know you're groaning again. Unfortunately, this condition will last easily for the next 2 weeks. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see the last time we actually reached storm levels was back around the 17th of December. Since then, we've been going to pretty much unsettled conditions. We did bump up to active conditions for a short while just before the new year, but it didn't last. And this is from the fast wind from these shrinking coronal holes. And as we approach solar minimum, this is pretty much the story. The windows of opportunity to get aurora are beginning to shrink themselves, so we're going to have to be on our toes. But the next time we get a chance will be in about 3 to 4 days when that another remnant of that coronal hole rotates into the Earth strike zone. And although the storms over the holidays have not been all that intense, we still got some beautiful views of aurora all over the world, like this in Finland and in Russia. It was seen in Norway and in Sweden, in Scotland, and over the pond, it was seen in Saskatchewan, in Alaska, and even down under in New Zealand. So what else does the sun have in store for us this week? Well, this is Stereo A. It's our backside monitor. You can see here's Earth, here's the sun, and here's Stereo A staring at the sun from behind. And what you can see on the backside is it's not that much different from what the front side looks right now. We don't have a lot of bright regions, so the solar flux will remain incredibly low. This is bad news for you emergency responders, especially those working with HF radio. We don't have a lot of solar flux that are going to support radio propagation, so we're likely going to be dipping back down into poor conditions. Then one good thing about the backside is that you do see some coronal holes that will be sending us some more fast wind here over the next few weeks, and that's giving us bigger chances for solar storms, some more aurora, and also a chance to kind of disturb that upper atmosphere to help boost propagation. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we aren't anticipating any big storms anytime soon. So at high latitudes, NOAA's expecting unsettled conditions with a tiny chance of a minor storm, but most likely active conditions throughout the week. At mid-latitudes, we're actually expecting unsettled to even normal conditions. Things are getting very, very quiet, especially at mid-latitudes. But at the end of this week, the beginning of next week, we might see some fast wind from that remnant of a coronal hole. It's not expected to give us a big storm, but it might bump us back up into unsettled conditions. So your aurora photographers, you might want to kind of keep your batteries charged. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, this is where we get into the bad news. We have a spotless sun right now, which means we have no threat for solar flares or radio blackouts. And that's good news for you GPS users and you satellite phone operators. However, no active regions also means we have very little solar flux on the Earth-facing disk. And that's bad news for you amateur radio operators and you emergency responders who rely on HF radio. It looks like we are going to dip into poor propagation here at the beginning of next week. And taking a look at the backside of the sun, it looks like these conditions are going to continue for easily the next 2 weeks. So the space weather this week is going to be pretty quiet. We have a few bright regions on the Earth-facing sun right now, but it's not enough to keep the solar flux up. And this is bad news for you amateur radio operators and emergency responders as radio propagation dips down into the poor conditions. So CW is most likely going to be the phrase of the day. However, this is good news for you GPS operators and satellite phone users. You're probably loving life with really good conditions right now. And as far as you aurora photographers are concerned, you're pretty much on standby. We've got a remnant of a coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next couple days. And maybe it's going to send us enough fast wind to give us a decent aurora show, but it's kind of hard to tell as these coronal holes begin to shrink. But you know what? They may be shrinking, but they're not gone yet. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Always good to have Dr. T on the program with us. She is in Austin, Texas right now at the American Meteorological Society meetings, schooling all these terrestrial meteorologists all about space weather. So if you don't follow her on Twitter, well, there's something wrong with you and I don't want you in the house. That's all I've got to say. Amanda, how about you?
Well, I was just talking on chat here and someone said it would be great to see the aurora from nice Colorado. But, you know, they have seen it all the way down south to around Boulder, Colorado. I'm much further south than that. So, unfortunately, not going to see it. But it'd be nice to make a trek somewhere where you could see it without any light pollution. I think that would just be. Is that on your bucket list, Don? Would you like to see that?
I would love to, of course. I mean, it would have to be a Carrington event for me to see the aurora down here so close to the Gulf of Mexico. But no, I would love to. I've been dying to take an Alaska cruise. That's how I want to see the aurora, is on an Alaska cruise. Yeah, that's on my bucket list.
Having the orcas on one side and the aurora on the other. And Don, exactly. Sexy shirt you got on there. Love that shirt.
What, my green? You like my green?
Oh no, your other one. I'm sorry. You're doing Newsline, the Darth Vader Imperial.
The Darth Vader Imperial. Yeah, the Dark Cider. Yeah,
that's an awesome shirt. I do have some questions. Oh well, first let me show you guys a picture. This is part of the mudslide, and Victor will show this for you. This is my nephew's godparents' house in Montecito, and the whole first floor is covered in mud, and they were rescued by firefighters there and almost had to be lifted, but they managed to get out. They had mud up to their waist and they had carried their dog out and they didn't have a chance to grab their phones or anything. So prayers to everyone that's facing that. It just hits close to home. And it's my sister's, you know, her rehearsal dinner was there. I've been to that house and it's just sad, and it was a gorgeous house. So all right, let's move on. Jerry, W8RQM wants to know, how would I be able to show a YouTube video about my homebrew variable capacitors using a home-built manual CNC machine? How can you post those?
How can he post a YouTube video? Is that The question, Amanda, I'm a little unclear there.
Yeah, he just said, how would I be able to show a YouTube video about my homebrew? And you're the YouTube expert, so I figured maybe you could give him some expert tips on how to get those shots.
Okay. Well, the first thing you do is sign up, get a YouTube account. You can do that for free. Go to YouTube, and you'll learn how to sign on there, get an account. Then they will allow you to post videos. So you got to record the video next. If you've got a camera, well, video camera, certainly use that. If you're using a Windows machine, Windows Movie Maker, you could use that to do some basic editing with if you needed to. If you don't have a video camera, then use your cell phone. You know, most smartphones now will shoot decent video. I've actually done a couple of things before that I ended up using. So that is another option. The main thing I would say is hold your camera still while you're taking your shots. Don't move around a lot. And it'll make it easier for folks to watch. Once you get your video assembled, then you can log back into your YouTube account and upload it. When you do that, you will get a link to where that video is going to be posted. Copy that link, and then you can take that and email it to whoever you'd like to share that video with. Plus, if you set the video to be public, then anyone searching through YouTube can find that video. As you upload it, you put a description in there on what the video is about. There's also a place to put in keywords, and you would put in maybe a CNC milling machine or whatever, keywords you think there would kind of help people to discover that video. So that would be my tip.
And I agree with Windows Movie Maker. That's what I use to produce the Newsline headline piece here for Ham Nation. And it works great, and it's quick and easy.
Yeah.
And free.
And I think Val uses that too. Is that correct, Valerie?
I use that. I use BlackBerry if I want a screen capture, and then I use ProShow Producer a lot as well. So I kind of toggle, but I think out of all three of them, the easiest one is Movie Maker.
Okay. By the way, Valerie, you look stunning tonight. You look really nice.
I do.
Thank you so much. Yes, you do.
I have that Jerry's Gone glow.
Yeah, you might.
I almost spit my tea.
I am woman on my own glow.
Oh, man, that's funny. Now, I have a kind of a question about Jerry. Does he do special things to prepare for these kind of de-expeditions? Like, does he go into changing his diet and stuff to prepare to be out there for,
they do. They put him on a exercise and regiment and everything to get him ready for these things. He gets ready for this months in advance, and the UPS guys and the FedEx guys just keep showing up with spikes to go on their boots for walking on ice, and just every day a new box comes in with something in it. So, but yeah, he definitely, I may splurge on the diet thing because I do all the cooking and the baking, but yeah, he exercises.
Yeah, that makes sense. When they're going to go to, you don't want to have Applebee's and then go to beans and toast. So, well, thank you, Val. And that was an awesome interview, by the way, with Six Oscar. Oh, those guys are
cool.
Wasn't
that great to get guys from Somalia? That's pretty cool.
I was pretty shocked that their signal was so good, since you couldn't get that good of a signal out of Puerto Rico. So, hey, not bad.
It looked like they were in a brick building, and yeah, so that was good.
They did. I would have been nervous about being there with the razor wire AKs and stuff protecting me. But, those guys are doing an
isn't
awesome job.
Isn't that Black Hawk Down? That was Somalia, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go to
Mogadishu.
Somalia. No, thank you.
Nope. Okay, George, I have another question for you. This one is, and I know we get this question a lot, but you do some QRP work when you're out in the woods with Tommy and such, and you guys are messing around. Just real quickly, any kind of good QRP antenna that they can throw up inside their house for use?
Inside the house, that's going to depend on your band that you want to operate on. Obviously, coming up with an 80-meter antenna to operate inside the house be very difficult, as would 120. 40 meters might be possible. 20 on up, you know, the antennas get shorter, so they're a lot easier. I've had friends, well, my friend Wayne has used a couple of hamstick dipoles. You can, I forget what they call it. They make a mount that's, you can put two hamsticks on it, and they will operate like a dipole if you do that. And something like that might be possible, because then you can get a smaller antenna inside your house. The main problem is going to be locating it. You want to put it where you're not going to be around any metal, including wiring in your house, because you're going to get RF into everything. If you do that, even though it's QRP, you get some in there, but the big problem will be the noise that you're going to pick up. So you're going to have to experiment. Loop antennas, if you come up with a compact loop antenna too, that might be a good option to help combat the noise. But I would say the noise is that you're going to receive is going to probably be the biggest issue you would have. If you can get up in the attic, so much the better. You know, we've covered attic antennas here before, and different things people have done around the house. So some experimenting, you know, just start somewhere and try till you get something that works.
The magnetic loops come to mind. A lot of people in the chat room are saying the chameleon P loop. So yeah, the magnetic loops work really, really good because they're small, they're compact, and a perfect fit inside, and it's great for QRP. So not the most efficient in the world, but I mean, you know, when you're looking at doing QRP with a loop antenna anyway, it's all a compromise, but that will do it inside for you for sure, a magnetic loop.
Absolutely. And as Bob's favorite saying is, just put it up and try it out.
Exactly.
Don't overthink it. Just put something up, see if it works. If not, try the next one.
It's better than nothing.
That's right. I just a couple of tips here for the chat room. Sometimes we as hosts miss your questions, and I'm going to give you a hint on how we can find your questions better. When you want to send something to us, just copy and paste our username and put that in the text box first, and then type your question, and then it highlights up red for us and we see it immediately. I don't like to miss questions, but it happens sometimes because sometimes it moves so fast. So if you have a comment for Don and want to tell him his shirt is ugly, you know, just copy name, put it in, Don, your shirt sucks. All right. Other than that, I know. That was a great example, everyone. It's fine. Perfect. Let's go next. We have 14 Charlie for D-Star, Do Drop In for Echolink, Tech 311 for DMR. 7192 I heard was kind of occupied, so search around there for Kevin and that on the 40 meter, and I have not seen anything about the 80 meter net, so look in chat. But right now I'm going to send it back to Valerie, and she has a lovely tribute that she would like to share with us, so take it away, Val.
Yeah, normally we don't do this, but with Dave Collingham's passing, K3LP, he was a really big name in the DX world, and he also gave back a lot to a lot of kids and teaching them ham radio, and so I just wanted to pay a little tribute to him. I've had him on my segment at least three times. So and as you heard, he passed away, him and his dog passed away when he was trying to save his dog on a neighboring farm. And unfortunately for those of you guys on WTWW, it is a slideshow, but you get to hear this beautiful music. It was free. It's called Coming Home by Adrina Thorpe, Adrina Thorpe. And this is for Dave and all his loved ones and everybody's heart that he's touched throughout the years.
Morning light upon my pillowcase. Well, hello, here comes a day. Should I rise up from these sheets of lace? Let the sun my face. Far too long I slept in solitude, with these walls as cold as ice. If I awake, will it be worth it all? feel the sun upon my face. I'm coming home to where you are, to the arms that held me long. I'm coming home, I've run too long. Unlock the door, turn the key, I've been back to me.
Goodbye, Dave. We'll miss you.
Thanks, Val. Yeah. That was a really great tribute.
Very sad. He was a good guy.
I mean, he was just here last November, so.
He's been on Ham Nation a time or two, as I recall, as well. So,
well, yeah. I've had him on at least three times. I didn't go back and count, but he might have been on before that, too. Yeah. So, it's just so tragic, so. And he was really getting into the giving back, and I'm going to probably be doing something with that. I've been talking to some people about doing something, but I'll wait for things to settle first. But really sad. So, all right.
Well, I think that'll do it for us tonight. On that note, remembering Dave, we will see you all next week here on Ham Nation. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Night.